This is KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix. A new collection of short fiction explores climate change, but its title indicates something even larger than that. It's called Everything Change, and it was put together by ASU's Imagination and Climate Futures Initiative. Joey Eschrig is program manager for the University's Center for Science and the Imagination and one of the collection's editors. And Joey, welcome.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
So how did the collection get its name? It's not climate change. It's Everything Change.
Yeah. So we had Margaret Atwood, the amazing speculative fiction writer and a pioneer in climate fiction, out to ASU in 2014 to be our first Imagination and Climate Futures lecturer. And we had the opportunity to do a video interview with her, which was a little bit daunting because she's such a hero of ours. But we talked to her about this concept of climate change and its broad effects on the planet. And she said, you know, I don't even really like that term anymore. I'm starting to think of it as an everything change, not just a climate change.
Wow.
And we thought that, I mean, that really stuck with us. It's the epigraph for this book. We gave the whole quote as well as the title. And accidentally, it also, we accidentally sort of landed on a similar title to Naomi Klein's This Change Is Everything, which is a great book about our global economic system and its effects on the climate. So we sort of accidentally ended up in Naomi Klein's backyard with this, but Margaret Atwood is the one who inspired us to use that title.
I don't want to paint with too broad a brush here, but so much of the future, science fiction or other aspects of it, are pretty dystopian. It's this concept that, wow, all is not quite lost, but we're pretty darn close, and we made some really terrible decisions in the present, which affected the future. How many of the stories in this collection would you consider to be sort of, even if they're realistically downers, and how many are saying, hey, we can fix this either now or in the future?
That's a great question, and I hesitate to put, there's 12 stories in the book, and I hesitate to put them into dystopian and utopian camps because most of them are somewhere in between. I do think several of the stories do present really grim pictures of the future, and there's one actually that comes to mind called The Grandchild Paradox, which is a great story that really grapples with two young people's emotions in a very drastically climate-changed world where sea level rise has eliminated a lot of landmass on the planet. And so it's a very sort of far future, full-on catastrophe take. The story isn't really about people starving, though. It's not about utter chaos in the streets. It's about the emotions that these people have, their kind of anger at previous generations and their sense of powerlessness about changing the shape of the planet. And at the same time, there's a beautiful little subplot in that story about these people building out of scrap and waste that they find dredged up from the shores in this little island. They build their own bicycles, these really sturdy bikes that can take the hilly expanses of this island really well. And these young people are also deciding whether or not they should have a child together. And so the story really gets at this dystopian picture of how do we move forward when we're already living in that nightmare future, if that's the possibility that we end up in. And I think that that story, to me, is emblematic of what a lot of the stories do well in this collection, which is get at emotion and our frustrated and conflicted responses about how to adapt to climate change and our sense of persecution that we should have to. And I think this is it was apparently quite easy for our authors to imagine themselves looking back and saying, why didn't we do something sooner? And you know, blaming their parents and grandparents.
And how vital is it that we personalize these things, that there are characters in these stories that people can either see themselves in or grasp in some way?
So I think it's, you know, of the utmost importance that we do that. And actually, I was just reading recently, James Hansen, who's a retired NASA scientist, has a not yet peer-reviewed paper out that says that the climate on Earth today is the hottest that it's been in 115,000 years, and read about it in The Guardian. It's being reported in a lot of places. So that really kind of ignited a thought about this book because that's such a macro picture. Mm-hmm. He's looking at almost geologic timescales and looking at all of the available climate data. I think it's extremely important, though, to not just present that data, but try to get people to empathize with people from different backgrounds who are very different than them. Barbara Kingsolver, you know, an author with great ties to Arizona, once said good fiction creates empathy. And in an interview in the book, Paolo Bacigalupi, who's a really renowned climate fiction writer,
Water said Knife that, was his book, yeah.
Exactly, yeah, which gives us a rather grim and dystopian picture of Arizona, by the way. He says fiction has a superpower, and that's creating empathy for people in alien experiences, people allowing us to live inside the skin of people who are utterly unlike us. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really important because climate change is going to affect all of us in really different ways, depending on our socioeconomic background, where we are in the world geographically, our ethnicities, our religions. And so I think it's going to be really important to start to recognize how climate change is shaping people's lives and transforming them, and in some cases exacerbating existing inequalities and, you know, kind of exacerbating the marginalization of already disadvantaged communities, and getting to all of the different parts of the world and all of the different ecosystems that climate change is going to have disparate effects on is really important. And having different people's eyes and experiences to see through, I think, is the one of the best ways that we have to do that.
Well, so does the villain in climate change fiction have to be some powerful force, or can it be just collective neglect in some way?
Wow, that's a big question.
Like almost like we weren't good. We didn't take care of the earth the way we should have, for example.
I think there's a kind of a tacit antagonist in some of these stories. I don't know if I'd call it a villain. In one of the stories, Victor and the Fish, which takes place in Montana and was actually written by an ASU graduate student, as it turns out, in English, Matthew Henry. The antagonist is really wildfires. It's not any particular person. There's sort of this boogeyman in the story who works for the Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and he seems self-interested and maybe not adapting and reacting to this really dire situation in a way that's kind to everyone around him necessarily. He's a little bit, he's primarily interested in gathering data and furthering his own career. Mm. But the really bad guy in the story, I guess, is this raging wildfire that threatens to engulf everyone. And so in a lot of cases, I think we're challenged to think of whether Mother Nature or whether the Earth or its systems are antagonists or bad guys in these stories, or whether it's almost this sort of, you know, retribution for bad decisions. I think the stories play with that in some cases. Sometimes it's rising sea level. Sometimes it's fire. Sometimes it's severe weather. So a lot of times people, what I've found in reading these stories, and that what's really struck me emotionally, was that in a lot of cases what we see are friendships, romantic relationships, family relationships that are getting strained or transformed or deformed by this rapidly changing climate. And so that's where the conflict comes from. There is this antagonistic ecosystem or weather system in the background that's making people, putting people in stressful situations. But it's often the way their relationships are getting changed that provides the dramatic tension in the story.
And Joy, very briefly, about 30 seconds left, what kind of impact are you hoping this kind of collection has?
You know, at the Imagination Climate Futures Initiative in general, we're hoping that fiction helps us have better conversations, more productive conversations about how to adapt to climate change. Again, how different communities and different places adapt, and how we can have a response that's sensitive to people, to people's very different circumstances, and that tries to get to, you know, sort of actionable futures that we can live into, and that we can hopefully realize if we act smartly today.
Joey Escherich is Program Manager for ASU's Center for Science and the Imagination. We've been talking about the climate change collection of stories. It's called Everything Change. And Joey, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much, Steve.